the productivity, energy is going down, and then you're having negative thoughts, they're pretty good indicators that you're experiencing burnout to some degree.
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many things they love talking about which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcasts, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla Singson's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and principle-heavy topics, you'll gain insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new boss. Big thanks to Proximity Outsourcing for sponsoring this episode. Outsource the most tedious tasks in your business, such as data management, appointment setting, and creatives, for less than $12 an hour, fully managed. Visit ProximityOutsourcing.com for more info. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes weekly.
Are you spending too much money on ads? Want to increase your average order value? Are you eyeing that big exit from your business? Or have you been wondering how you can increase your lifetime value, build a community, and basically make more money through customer loyalty and retention? Let us help. Huckleberry Consulting brings over a decade of experience in client and customer success from the world's biggest companies. Let your customers tell you what they want. Visit consulthuckleberry.com to claim your free audit and quit leaving money on the table. Once again, that's consulthuckleberry.com. See you there.
Okay, good morning and happy Monday. Welcome to another episode of None of Your Business. It's the holiday and I'm in the Philippines, so I am super excited for all the food I'm going to eat, but also a little bit nervous about all the social commitments and all of the shopping, all of the long lines, just all the hecticness. But so I have noticed that even as an entrepreneur and a business owner, December usually brings with me a different version of burnout. And in the past, I have suffered through just a huge overdraft, quote unquote, overdraft of my mental energy, my social battery. And at the end of December, I usually just stay at home, watch something shallow, and get food delivered for like a week straight. But hopefully I've learned my lesson. And today we are going to have a very great discussion about that topic, actually burnout. So I have here a very special guest. He is an entrepreneur, and after researching the connection between ADHD, burnout, and what we call flow, my guest, Jamie Toyne, developed a coaching program called Flojo, which helps ADHD founders to cure burnout, harness their ADHD superpowers, and start flowing towards their goals. He is also the author of The Pressure Gauge Mindset and founder of two other companies called DealFlow and Exit Planner that help more than 400 entrepreneurs successfully exit their business. And I know a lot of you guys are business owners or aspiring business owners, and a lot of you are very curious what really goes in that process of exiting your business. But I also know a lot of you are curious about dealing with burnout. So let's talk about that. Today, my guest and I will sit down and talk about the process of going from burnout to a business exit. Ladies and gentlemen, Jamie Toyne. How are you today, Jamie?
So good, Carla. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. So like I said, it's a little hectic, but I'm surviving. So I know a lot of people are super curious about your background. And so tell us, what's your story and how did you end up becoming as the burnout coach?
because I'm really good at burning out. I've burnt out three times. I mean, categorized burnouts in different ways, but three significant burnouts that changed the direction and the trajectory of my life, I would say. The first was when I was playing tennis professionally as a teenager. And then the two subsequent burnouts happened in a couple of different business ventures. And so, yeah, I think after the second burnout I had, I started to really try and figure out what was going on. And I thought I'd found the solution, which was flow, or what how I understood flow. And then I sort of burnt out again. And that third time, I really went deep on understanding my ADHD a little deeper, really understanding and learning about, burnout, the neuroscience behind flow, but also the sort of more holistic philosophy of flow. And that was really what led me to sort of discovering what I call Flojo, and I'm happy to explain that a little bit at some point. But yeah, that's really my journey. And I think, I've been consulting business owners for sort of 13 plus years now. And the last 4 years really just focusing on the coaching side. I think over time, you just sort of start to realize who you're getting the best results for, who you feel the most pulled to working with. And they were entrepreneurs that were sort of struggling with things that I'd struggled with, which was burnout, and really sort of like managing or navigating and now leveraging our ADHD. So over time, I sort of put together a program to really focus on helping people like me that struggle with similar things.
Yeah, well, thanks for sharing. Yeah, I know your experience as a professional tennis player, an athlete, is something different. And I'm actually a little bit curious about that because I used to play table tennis as well competitively when I was in school. And then after that, I became a nerd and moved to debate, competitive debate. And I also was a member of the debate varsity. But even though I had long hours and honestly questionable diet, questionable sleep, I personally didn't feel like I was burnt out. Did you think that it was because I was just young, or what did you think was what's your hunch? Like I never really felt burnt out. I was just like so into it.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it was because you were experiencing flow a lot of the time. Yeah, I think sort of, the opposite experience of burnout is flow. And so that's what I experienced for a long time in my tennis career. I mean, I was diagnosed with ADHD as a child, and I struggled in the classroom. I was getting kicked out of class a lot. I was getting suspended quite often, and I was sent to the doctor, and they diagnosed me with ADHD. I didn't take medication. My mum didn't like the idea of putting me on those really heavy meds at that age. So I continued to struggle in the classroom, but tennis was, I mean, all sports really, but tennis was a place where I could escape the sort of scattered thoughts in my head and really drop into flow. I could drop into my body, and I experienced peace. So it's really interesting. I think sport was really great for me until it got too serious. Or rather, I started getting sponsorships, and one of the sponsorships that I so like free clothes and rackets. I mean, that's exciting and cool, but then I got a sponsorship that was more like an investor. And so the deal was that he would pay for everything, like training, coaching, travel, accommodation, living expenses, and in exchange for a percentage cut of my prize money. Now, at the age of 16, I was not winning a lot of prize money. But the idea was, as I, if, you know, if I made it to the big time, he would get a really nice juicy return on his investment. And so when that relationship started, I think I was 16, I dropped out of school and I started training full time and traveling on the pro circuit. And that was really challenging for me. And I all of a sudden, like what used to be a really like safe, fun environment where I could just drop into flow and like have fun and chase a ball around and get a sweat up. It became the place where the noises in my head were the loudest,
The pressure is coming from a different place, and it kind of throws you off, huh? I can definitely empathize with that. And yeah, like I think now it's all clicking, looking back at my experience. Like if I was to really assess my lifestyle, it wasn't healthy at all. I was definitely working too hard. And even in debate, I would train from 4 p.m. to midnight every day, and I was a full-time college student. But we just read and we practiced our speech, and we would do these mock debates and hang out and talk about these world topics just so we have matter for discussion. And I cannot imagine that that's what I did. But you're right, it's not because I was young and I had a lot of energy. I felt that for me, my definition of flow, listening to you, is when I trust all parts of my body to do what they're supposed to do. And I think when I was playing table tennis, the Asian version of what you were playing, and when I was debating, that's what I felt. I trusted every cell in my body to do what they're supposed to do, and there was nothing else. But let's talk about burnout a little bit and ADHD as well, because for me, growing up in a developing country, ADHD is not a thing at all. You know, mostly people are just like, are you paying attention or not? You're being lazy or not? You being lazy, you're going to be poor. It was like, you know, a very different world. Yeah, that's the message. So can you tell me a little bit about ADHD and how do you define burnout?
Yeah, well, I mean, ADHD is a neurodevelopmental disorder of the brain. It's not a particularly grave disorder. It's actually, I think it's a disorder's probably not the right word. Our brains just function a little bit differently. It means that we have, particular challenges with executive function and impulse control and focus and intuitiveness, and things like that. And so I can connect that with burnout in a moment, but I just want to mention that what's really interesting is, a lot of you would have noticed, like the diet, the people are talking about ADHD all the time, and a lot of entrepreneurs, particularly, are sort of like, do I have ADHD? And maybe you do, maybe you don't. But what's really interesting is there's a temporal condition called VAST, which stands for Variable Attention Stimulus Trait, and it was discovered by Dr. Ned Halliwell, who's sort of like one of the godfathers of ADHD. And essentially, it's caused by chronic cognitive overload. And this is really interesting because cognitive overload in general is, that's like one of the main blockers of flow. Like when we're overloaded in our prefrontal cortex, it's impossible to get into flow. And what you were talking about before in terms of table tennis is like trusting your body. When we activate flow, our prefrontal cortex, the activity slows right down. And it's almost as if we're like getting out of our head and into our body, and our decisions and our actions just flow effortlessly and perfectly. And so, I think that. That's just a really, I just wanted to note that for people that might be listening that are wondering if they have ADHD, might be diagnosed with ADHD, or might think that ADHD is this like over-diagnosed fast that, adults use to as an excuse to behave like children, so, but it doesn't really matter if you're experiencing those symptoms of inattentiveness or impulse control or lack of focus and able to get traction with your projects. The I guess the solutions to resolving those symptoms are the same whether you have ADHD or not. So, I do have people in my program that are not diagnosed with ADHD, and it doesn't really matter if they have ADHD or not. Burnout, I think the easiest way to describe burnout is like there's sort of four things. One's an energy thing. So if you're physically, emotionally, or mentally exhausted on a regular basis, that's a big burnout indicator. If you feel like you are sort of performing or operating, well below your baseline or your potential, if you're constantly having sort of negative thoughts about yourself and other people, is a really big one as well. And so like if your productivity energy is going down, and then you're having negative thoughts, they're pretty good indicators that you're experiencing burnout to some degree.
Got it. Yeah. And because I also don't want people to just had a long day and then they're like, I'm burnt out right now. Like you kind of also don't want to overuse the word and then it, you know, becomes your reality, even if it's not like And you don't want them to misdiagnose themselves with burnout too. So, how did this become, out of curiosity, how did burnout become like your favorite problem to solve? Why not, I don't know, AI or sending rockets to the moon or something else?
Yeah, I guess well, a couple of reasons. I think like most of my career has been in services where I've been working directly with entrepreneurs. And I think and at a very like sort of micro business and small business level. And I've used to have a brokerage company, so I help people sell their business. I was interacting with a lot of burnt out people and learning about their stories and observing why they were burnt out, why they wanted to sell their business, why they wanted to get out. And so I think on that level, it's always been a part of the work that I've done. And then I think also like when I look at the hardest moments in my life and the most transformative moments in my life, they've been around those moments of burnout. And to your point around what is burnout, oh, I'm feeling burnt out today because I had 5 hours sleep. Yeah, I mean, you can use it in that way. Like you can say, oh man, I'm dead. When you're not dead, you're just tired. But when I talk about my three instances of burnout, the first one, I something like snapped inside of me, and I smashed all of my tennis rackets in the middle of a tennis match in front of hundreds of spectators, and I walked over to the other side of the net and I forfeited the match, and I never played another game of tennis again professionally. That was it. So like that's when you're really pushing something and your car's running in the red to the point where the engine explodes, that's burnout. My second experience of burnout, I was for all extensive purposes, it looked like I was crushing it. I was living in Mexico at the time. I had a business headquartered in San Francisco, and I'd generated enough wealth to live for the foreseeable future. And I just stepped down as the CEO of my company, took 6 months off, went completely offline. And like moved back home to the tiny desert town that I grew up in Australia to live with my mum and like garden and cook and just like meditate and relax. And so, that's burnout to me. It's a significant thing. And you're there's a spectrum, I suppose. And the closer you are to, the deep red on the pedometer, the more likely you are going to burn out, obviously.
Yeah, I like the metaphor that you used about car engine exploding and burning out, because I literally saw like a rubber, running like low, like thin, and about to also like the car about to fail. So I like that. So it is kind of like an end of the rope thing. And I recently watched that Simone Biles documentary where she also experienced the same thing, and she quit in the middle of the Olympics, and she was like, I'm burned out. I can't take it anymore. I don't care. If you guys think that you're all counting on me to win this medal, I'm gonna choose myself here. And for me, that was very inspiring, because a lot of people glorify hustle culture in business to the point of burning out. So, based on your experience working probably in your career as a coach, in your speaking, guesting in other people's podcasts, speaking on stages, can you share one or two maybe surprising things or myths about burnout that you have recently discovered or that you really want to share, because it may very likely change someone's life?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm gonna riff off what you just mentioned. I think the fallacy of the hustle culture is real. There's many ways to get from point A to point B, and a lot of people choose to sort of push the heavy boulder up the hill and sort of use grit and determination and sweat, blood, and tears to sort of inch their way to the top. And they're really the glory stories. That's sorry, the glory stories. That's the hero's journey, suffering, 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 and then getting to the top. And I think when I observe entrepreneurs that have done that and then go on to exit their business for an amount of money that means that they're financially secure for the rest of their life and they've essentially obtained financial freedom, the ones that sort of walked that path that was full of suffering often didn't like that glory moment lasted a few moments, and like the wreckage behind them that they left in their personal life and or their health or whatever. I don't know if the juice was worth the squeeze. And you know, they're you know, often taking like years after the exit to sort of like figure out what the meaning of life is and what they actually value. And so yeah, I would say that you know, really what I am sort of working with and what I discovered for myself and are teaching other people is to really try and focus on, instead of pushing, like trying to focus on what pulls you. So it's trying to put your energy into things where energy flows back to you rather than just keeps leaking out. Like, you know, it's like you've got a leaky jar and you're constantly having to fill it up. And so, you know, again, just coming back to flow, I think that's basically the main thing. And I would say the beautiful thing about flow is that it is our natural state of being. And what I mean by that is, you know, we used to experience flow all the time as kids, you know, playing, making art, playing sport, hanging out, imagining things, making up games. And as adults, as life becomes more serious and we, you know, have more pressure and responsibilities, that sort of the anxious mind, that conditioning, that prefrontal cortex, you know, sets these really intense, ambitious goals, and you know, it's just really hard to get into flow because we're so focused on, you know, past events and future events. And so I think that the other thing I would mention is the relationship that you have with yourself. I talk about this a lot. I talk about like the general part of me, which is like the ambitious one that's like, I want to be top 10 in the world at tennis, or I want to have a 10, you know, a 9-figure business or whatever. And then the workhorse part of me that is actually the one that has to sit down in front of the computer and do the work, or jump on the tennis court and do the training. And really, if I look at it, in all three burnouts, it was the relationship between those two parts of myself that became so toxic and eventually imploded, which is what led to the burnout. And so if you think about yourself as these two different parts, you know, this ambitious part and then the person that's actually doing it, what you want to be mindful of is like, you know, what does that relationship look like? Is my higher self, the general, setting my lower self, the workhorse, up for failure every day? Are you like a classic example? It's Monday today, right? So Tuesday, what's on your to-do list? Is there, you know, an achievable amount of work on there, or is there 20 hours of work on there? You're not giving yourself that positive feedback loop. You're never allowing, you know, yourself to actually celebrate a win. You know, I draw this image of, you know, the general basically riding me at like on horseback with a stick and a carrot, right? Dangling the carrot of motivation and beating me with the stick. And if we don't allow ourselves to ever eat the carrot and we're just constantly beating ourselves with the stick, we're gonna burn out. And so yeah, I mean, some more, there's lots of practical examples that you could translate that into, but like, you know, one is, you know, I just gave an example of planning. You know, I think, yeah, it's almost as if like, what conditions or environment do you need to create to get into flow? So for you in table tennis, it was like, whatever the conditions were, they were right for you to access flow. But if you started to underperform, or you started to not enjoy playing, like something's wrong there, and it's up to your general part of your higher self to basically redesign your environment or the way that you're engaging with that activity so that it feels flowy. In other words, if work doesn't feel like play, you're doing it wrong.
Wow, that's really that's such a cool thought, actually. It made me think, and it made me look back at that time when I was competing. And there was one time when I just couldn't win, but I almost, and it killed me. I was it really bothered me so much. I almost quit. And then I sat down and I thought to myself, what am I really good at in table tennis? Why can't I win this last thing? And I realized I'm really good at finding weaknesses more than probably good forehand and backhand. And so I realized if I had more opportunities to find weaknesses, I would probably win. So I quit the singles. I quit the singles route just like that, and I went to doubles, and I only played doubles. And the first time I played, I won, and I stopped because I stopped playing table tennis competitively. Yeah, because I didn't want to lose, and I was just kind of like, I'm gonna end this career on a high note. But I realize if I play doubles, whoever my teammate will be, it doesn't matter as long as they're good enough. What matters is now I have more opportunities to find weaknesses because now there's two opponents. But that was, I would say, looking back at that experience, and I was like, I don't know what. I entered college at 15. I think I was 16 at this time. And I was having those thoughts, and that's how I dealt with it. But you're right. The approach was like maybe looking at the task differently and maybe finding a thing that will help you maybe see something in a different light might help. That's really, really helpful because even now, different challenges running our business or managing your household, you can easily get burnt out from these things, and maybe all it takes is a fresh perspective. So I really like that, and I also like your point about taking a step back and realistically looking at like your to-do list and asking yourself, am I setting myself up for burnout? I used to have an attitude of I have a to-do list, I have a planner Monday, Tuesday, and on one day, for example, on Monday, I would already fill enough to do like to-dos until the Thursday part of my planner. And I was setting myself up for failure because even the notebook gave up on me and like, girl, you can't do this many things in one day. But I was trying to do that. I was trying to be efficient, and I burnt out a lot. And then it snowballed into bad habits. Like at the end of the day, I'm so burnt out. Then I order fast food. And then I watch something shitty on TV because I'm so burnt out. And or I would ba have bad like dating habits. So it was bad. It would just snowball into other things. So thank you for sharing that. It made me definitely, it confirmed a lot of things that happened in my past that I know now, like, oh, that was the lesson. So can you share a huge myth about burnout that you hate hearing?
Myth.
Or is there a way that people misuse the term that really irks you? So, yeah, don't worry. No one can cancel anyone on this podcast because I turned on the explicit language checkbox.
Yeah, honestly, it's a pretty boring answer, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head where, I think whatever definition of the people have about burnout, I think it's, if it's overused or it's sort of like used in a way. Just like using the word dead when we're not dead, but we feel dead.
Oh.
I'm kind of fine with it. Well, maybe an unhealthy relationship that people have with burnout is like they wear it as a badge of honor.
That's a good one.
And it's, again, going back to the hero's journey, it's like, a lot of people boasting about how many hours they work or how little sleep they get every night or how they can function on this and that. I don't have a lot of that doesn't impress me at all.
Yeah, absolutely. It used to impress me, and the funny thing is when people start saying it on social media, oh, I'm so busy, this and that. Yeah, you're so busy, you have time to post this. Like, it's kind of funny, but they're obviously looking for like a piece of validation, right? And I've been there too. I've been there. I would meet my friends from school and like, how's work? How are you? You know, after a while not seeing, and sometimes you feel like you have to say you're so busy so that you sound important or something, right? But I definitely see a shift in the mindset also. Like right now, I see a lot more people also indulging in rest, and of course, the pandemic caused a huge existential crisis around the world. That actually was kind of a reset button for me too, and it helped me look at my life differently. So, from your experience of helping founders go from burnout to literally a pinnacle of their career, such as a business exit, that's a pretty huge leap. Can you share maybe one or two top tips or maybe a framework to do this? And of course, I would love to take the opportunity to also for you to also talk about your diagnostic tool for your Flowjo Finder.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll attack it bit by bit, but yeah, I think so. Like, I mean, with the burnout stuff, I think the easiest way of addressing burnout is to remember that the opposite of burnout is flow, what I call Flowjo, and that's our natural state of being. So all we need to do to get into flow is to remove the things that are blocking us from flow, remove the blockers. So if you imagine us like a river, our energy is like a river, there's a bunch of boulders blocking the water from flowing down its natural course. All we need to do is remove those boulders from our river. And so really what we need to do is identify what those boulders are, and they can be anything. And remembering that we only have one river, a lot of entrepreneurs like to compartmentalize their personal life with their business life. And, they see it as two separate rivers, but it's all interconnected. It's all energy. I have a friend who is doing his PhD in psychology, and he's like in his sixth year of doing it. And the last 2 years have been, he's almost got nothing done. And you look at what's been happening in his personal life, he's really frustrated with his productivity. But you look at what's happening in his personal life, and he's had a big separation with his partner of 10 years. He's relocated to a new place. There's a lot of things not, in the last 6 months, he's just absolutely firing on it. And you look at what's changed, and it's the things in his personal life. He's settled, he's got a new place, he's in a healthy relationship with a new partner. And he's now performing significantly better. And so I think, finding things that are out of alignment, I keep going back to true nature, and I want to really drill this point home. I think it's really like we often try to fit a square peg in a round hole. And if you're neurodiverse, you've experienced this your whole life, but essentially you, instead of designing your business to sort of like leverage your strengths and like, make your life as flowy as possible, often what happens as we scale is we start sort of serving our business rather than the business serving us. And we forget that, we as the founder are like the most important asset in our business. And so we can get ourselves performing at like absolute optimum levels. The trickle down effect through business and our team is like huge. So yeah, I guess like that's probably the main thing, is just like identifying what's blocking us from flow and removing it. Could be a relationship, anything that, and the easiest way of identifying it is if you put energy into something, and it's not flowing back to you, then it's out of alignment and you need to figure out how to recorrect that. So if you're, could be anything, an employee, a romantic relationship, some system in your business that's just constantly causing you grief. So I would say that that's sort of like the main thing. And then once there's space for flow to emerge, the flow sort of just takes care of itself. You start enjoying what you're doing. You're no longer pushing. You're feeling pulled towards, drawn towards doing the projects you want to do. You start getting traction again. And then you sort of like, if you imagine a spectrum of like burnout to flow, you start moving from burnout towards flow, and you sort of, so that's sort of like the energetic part of it. The more practical part of selling your business is obviously a little bit more boring, but it's making sure that, I mean, there's sort of seven things in my book. I talk about seven things. I published it a few years ago and I haven't revised it in a while, so let's see if I can remember. But there's obviously like, the auditability of the business, how audible is the business, not just the finances, but the way that everything's run. Transferability is probably the second most important one. So how transferable is this asset to a new owner? If it's a personal brand, that's pretty hard to transfer. How's the business going to perform when I extract myself from that business? How easy is it to transfer the brand equity of that business across? And then there's, more practical assets and accounts and things like that. So making the business as audible as possible and as transferable as possible, you're already more sellable than 80% of businesses on the market. I can tell you that from experience. The next obvious one is performance, right? That's the other really big one of the business, how the business is trending. You don't want to make any significant changes to the way the business is run, prior to sale, like 3 to 6 months before sale, because any big change that's been made to your business, they're going to want to know what the downstream effects of that is with performance. Like if you let go of a couple of team members or something like that. But obviously, trimming the fat on your operating expenses and increasing the profit, obviously profitability looks attractive. So that's three I've got through. What else have we got? Defensibility is a really obvious one. Now, a lot of small businesses, it's really hard to like create a solid defense barrier for your business. But just, at a very like basic level, can your product or service be replicated and stolen by someone else easily? Like, what's stopping someone else from just entering the market and taking your market share? How easily can you defend that? They'll look at that. They will look at scalability, which has a lot to do with the monetization method and the business model. So if you're a services-based business and you're a one-to-one service-based business, that's extremely not scalable. Are you going to change your entire business model 1 year out from sale to improve the scalability, to improve the valuation and sellability of your business? Probably not. But it's something to think about. Or you might pivot one of your revenue streams or include another revenue stream to improve the scalability of your business. And then inherently, software as a service, subscription-based businesses are more scalable by nature, so they often fetch higher multiples. What else have we got? There's the miscellaneous category, which is where you put things in external market factors. What's going on? Are there any trends that are going to affect your business? Any changing laws? The reasons for sale, whether you're willing to sign a non-compete and leave the industry. All of these sorts of things can affect the sellability and the valuation. I'm just counting on my finger. I think that's six, so there must be one more that I'm missing.
Well, now they have to get your book. So,
Yeah. Yes, thank you. Let me off the hook. Let me off the hook.
I'm gonna link it in the show notes. Actually, that's really, really good. You got me there, Jamie. I'm gonna buy that book, actually. I'm like, tell me. That's a perfect open loop right there. This is a marketing class. So, I love that. I loved everything that you shared actually on the mindset part and then the practical part of the business because I'm in the business of outsourcing, as you know, and I have this big mission of that businesses should serve the founders and not the other way around because my long career was actually in events management and I was burnt out. Super burnt out, long hours and very demanding clients. My clients were big corporations and they had all these rules, all these brand guidelines. And my diet was really bad. And when I turned 30, I was like, I cannot do this anymore. I need to have a way to make money online. And that's why I started my online business. And of course, starting an online business is also not a walk in the park, maybe the Jurassic Park, but it is definitely way better than all the physical burnt out. At least now, if I have a mental like if I have a difficult day mentally, I can do something physical and actually get back to flow. And I already thought of all these activities when you were sharing, like. Think about the things that make you really happy and make you feel like you're in your natural state. And I definitely have some activities so that I already have I can think about. Yeah, I love what you shared because it also puts business owners in a mindset of I have to be in a certain way as a founder, and my business also has to be in a certain way, and they're both really connected. So thank you for sharing. So for a founder to, get prepared for an exit, or maybe they're just trying to get out of a burnout state, right? What kind of mindset or habits should they have? Is there any kind of needle moving daily habit that you can recommend based on your work with like hundreds of founders?
Mindset. Yeah, it's an interesting one. So I talk about sort of like when I mentioned blockers before or like the boulders, I sort of categorize them into five categories.
Nice.
One of them is clarity. One of them is alignment. All self-explanatory. One is energy, one is focus, and the fifth is mindset. And I would say that in my tennis career, it was the mindset blocker that really got me. I really couldn't process that pressure in a healthy way and make sense of it in a way that I was able to relax and perform. So yeah, I wonder like what little nugget I could give. I'm gonna sound like a broken record, but I think for me the most powerful thing for me in terms of in relation to burnout and in relation to peak performance is really getting the different parts of yourself working together as a team. One thing I didn't mention before is like, a lot of the frustration that entrepreneurs have is that the week just seems to get away from them and they didn't get what they wanted done. And it's almost like they feel like they're rebelling against themselves. It's like, I just let myself down again. And often what's happening is it's that workhorse, that lower part that is like not getting to do the things that they want to do a lot of the time. And it's up to the planning higher self, that prefrontal cortex, to set your lower self up for success. And so really, really trying to get those two working together as a team is probably the most, unique and interesting sort of mindset related thing that I've stumbled across that has like made a huge difference for me and my performance and my clients.
No, I like that. I mean, it's basically just like this is the most important thing for you to think about. And if I was to add to that, I think a lot of it for me was also honesty, honesty to myself. And I think that's honest. I think that's what I struggled with, to be completely honest. It's like I'm a smart person. I know which activities fill me up emotionally and mentally, and I know which activities don't. But there were just instances where I noticed when I was looking back, if I was coaching myself, I was just not being honest to myself. And maybe I was overridden with like expectations from, I don't know, society, culture, people around me. Like a small example would be I love hosting potlucks. And I definitely had some moments where I would schedule a potluck on a particular day, and then fully knowing that I genuinely would love to cook for that potluck. I love cooking for potlucks, out cooking for my friends, and it makes me happy. It brings me joy and puts me in flow, actually. And I love that activity, and I love it when they taste my food. Like it's their first time to try Filipino food, and the look on their faces. Oh, I love that so much. If I could bottle that up, that'd be awesome. But I would keep scheduling things in that day, and then I wouldn't have time to cook. And I've experienced this quite a few times when my potluck would be at 6. At 4, I should start chopping and cooking, and I still can't. And I would still be in my laptop doing things. And then my husband's like, "Hey, isn't it time to cook?" And I'm like, "Yeah, but I have this, I have that." But then I also realize one time, I'm like, "You know what? I never promised to cook. Also, I can still host a potluck and I can order food. And that's fine. Nobody will judge me. I'll still be a great host and we'll have a great time." So it sounded so like almost stupid to me, but I'm like, yeah, I do love cooking, but today I don't have to do that. Actually, we can just still have a great party, and that's how I was able to take myself out of a looming burnout.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's a really good micro example of Yeah, just being kind and compassionate to yourself and problem
Yes.
solving to yourself. It's a really great example. I love that.
Yeah, and in the past, I covered my thoughts with just expectations of other people and things that weren't real and things that weren't true. And I don't know how long it took me, but sometimes as a woman also, the expectations from you are very different. And then there's the cultural stuff, and then there's a family duty stuff that sometimes also puts you in a different point of pressure. So from now on, I'm more mindful that am I being honest to myself? Is this really what I want? And other examples are, like meeting up with a friend who doesn't align anymore, right? And it's like, and now you're just hanging out there and you're like dreading it and you're like, I want to be somewhere else. Well, thank you for sharing. Are there any tools or resources that you can recommend for people listening? How can they access your tool? And are there any other books, resources, maybe TEDx talks that also change your life in this topic?
Yeah, I have the memory of a goldfish, so I'm not going to rattle off much in terms of there's lots of inspiring books and content. I can send you some after, and maybe you can just add them to
For
the
sure.
podcast description. But yes, I do have a tool, like a diagnostic tool on my website called Flowjo Finder. I didn't end up explaining what Flowjo Finder is, but you can find out on my website. And really, the idea is the diagnostic tool measures where are you on the spectrum of like extremely blocked, aka out, and like really flowing. And so it measures sort of like your level of burnout versus flow, and then it helps you identify what areas are you blocked in and how, what you need to focus on to remove those blockers to get more flow. And so that's a free diagnostic tool on my website. My website is my name, jamietoyne.com, slash Flojo Finder. That's Flojo dash Finder. And again, I'm sure you'll put the link in the description, but save everyone the headache of spelling that out.
Yeah, I love that. I'll definitely link that, and that's a very good way to just have a base point of where you are, and have a little bit of confirmation on what you guys would love to do next. I'm sure you guys have had a few aha moments in this podcast and a few stories from your own life that you can probably, that brings this experience to light. So, Jamie, thank you so much for all of your wisdom. Really, I truly enjoyed this and I learned a lot, actually. I feel like I scammed you for a consult.
No, it's cool to hang out. I've been curious to have a longer chat with you. It was cool meeting you earlier in the year, and it's nice to have a chat with you.
Yeah, no, likewise. This is funny, but like hashtag TMI, but I have a therapy session tomorrow, and this already makes that conversation easier. This podcast recording. Thank you so much, and I hope that to all of our listeners, definitely check out all of the links that we are going to share, especially the Flojo Finder diagnostic tool. It is a great step one. It is a great place to start to finding what you want to do next and what might be good for you. And of course, take a little bit of time to reflect, journal, meditate, whatever your process is, on everything that you heard today and whatever's coming up in your life. So, as a finale, Jamie, what is your advice for all of our business owners or all of our aspiring entrepreneurs who are maybe eyeing an exit, but also they're just eyeing to get out of burnout?
Well, focus on getting more flow in your life. Remove the blockers. I think that's it, really. Just like follow what's pulling you. And I mean, ideally, you're exiting your business on a high note rather than a fire sale.
Yeah, I love that. And of course, I want to also add here that Jamie works in this capacity as a mentor, as a coach. And if you genuinely feel like you need help, talk to Jamie. I will also link his LinkedIn and his Instagram. And if you have a community that you feel like will benefit from his wisdom, he's actually very generous with his time. If you have a podcast or a community, it would be a great conversation to have because this is really his mission. And I know you guys can feel his, how passionate he is in this discussion. So definitely don't hesitate to reach out to Jamie, ask for help. This could be the Hail Mary that you need. And this could be something that will really change your life or your community's life. So once again, thank you so much, Jamie, and I hope you have a good one.
Thank you. See ya.
Thanks. See you guys for next Monday for another episode of None of Your Business. Bye. So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Proximity Outsourcing, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit proximityoutsourcing.com and check out their solutions. If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have two conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.